This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
Welcome to a Men in Blazers pod special. When I look back and review the footballing year, one story looms out over all the others. The US women's national team marched to glory at the 2015 World Cup. A journey which began slowly in the group stage, but then picked up pace and became an unstoppable display of elite athleticism and national joy. Three of the winners, Ali Krieger, Becky Sauerbrunn, and Heather O'Reilly, took the Blazercon stage by storm, reliving their experiences with Fox Sports' Katie Nolan, our friend and studio mate from Garbage Time. Together, they talked about their summer of wonder and the future of the women's game in this country. Here's their conversation in its entirety. To glory.
David, this week, you and I were interviewed by an English soccer writer, and he told us he can't understand how we root for the US international teams. Does anybody here root for the US international teams? And I told him that the honest truth is, I fell in love with American soccer shortly after I landed on these shores, like Eddie Murphy in Coming to America.
Yeah. I've always seen you more as the Arsenio Hall character in that movie.
But I fell in love when I first saw Alexi Lalas and Marcelo Balboa swagger onto the field, clad in their stonewashed denim delight. And as someone who's lived the immigrant experience in this country, who loves football and loves America and wakes up every morning, and the first thing I think is, thank God I live in America. Thank God I live in New York City. There is nothing I adore more in the world than the feelings I experience when I watch the United States play football. Take that, St. Vincent.
And the Grenadines.
And I've never felt them, to be honest, more than this summer, when we watched with a giddy nation as the US women's national team beat all comers and took the women's game to new dizzying heights in this country.
Okay, the host of this next panel is one of the rising stars of sports media and, dare I say, American culture. Her unique voice and biting wit have made her the smart alternative to bald men who repeatedly make Wayne Rooney jokes. She's enjoyed a meteoric rise in the last few years, a rise that I've got to watch firsthand as the executive producer, suboptimally working on some of her very, very good shows. She now hosts her own superb show on Fox Sports One. It's called Garbage Time. If you haven't watched it, watch it. Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome to the stage, hailing from Framingham, Massachusetts, our panic roommate, the one and only Katie Nolan.
All right, keep clapping. Welcome to the stage. We've got Heather O'Reilly, Becky Sauerbrunn, and Ali Krieger.
Guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Obviously, I don't know if you guys know, you won, which is huge. But I don't want to start there. I want to start with like the last few months you've had of your life, which have been a whirlwind. Let me tell you all about it. Let's just run through some of the amazing things that have happened to you since you won in July. So July 10th was the parade in New York City. Yeah. Did anybody go? You guys went to that?
Nice.
Yeah. I was there too. One of the coolest things that I saw was so many little young girls in all of your jerseys. How cool was that for you guys?
Leading up to the parade, I grew up in New Jersey, so I remember these I remember watching ticker tape parades on TV when I was a little girl. And so when we were told that we were going to be having a ticker tape parade for us, I was kind of like, well, I hope people show up, you know? I was a little worried about the attendance. And then the day of was just absolutely breathtaking. The amount of people that were there was just thousands and thousands of people lining the streets of Lower Manhattan screaming for us. And yeah, it was just absolutely incredible to see the young people just inspired by what we were able to do. And we're looking forward to seeing what the next generation has to offer.
Yeah, it's very exciting. It's the first women's team to be honored with a ticker tape parade. And that was a huge deal. But then the next day, you were on stage for the Taylor Swift concert, which is also kind of a huge deal.
Well, I'll say this much. After meeting Taylor Swift, there's no doubt in my mind why she has been so successful over the years. I mean, she's incredible. She was so welcoming to us. Back in her dressing room, and she sort of was telling us the run of show and how it was all going to work. She huddles us up, and she's like in the middle, like doing X's and O's, and she's like, you know,
Her nail polish.
Yeah, she brings her nail polish out, and she's like, okay, here I am singing Style. Next, you guys are going to come out under stage, and the stage is going to rise up. Crowd's gonna go crazy, and we're gonna celebrate you guys like the champions you are. And everybody was just like rallying around each other. Abby was like getting so hyped, and yeah, it was pretty cool.
You can imagine that.
Then you went to a place called the White House. Is that what that says? on October 27th, and Obama, our president, said this team taught all of America's children that playing like a girl means you're a badass. You
that
got
was
the
badass.
President to curse. How cool was that experience?
His speech, and it was very inspiring, and we're just so honored to have been able to be there and to meet him and to celebrate together.
God, this list isn't even close to over, so I'll just blow through it. November 10th, you guys were Glamour Women of the Year. With people like Misty Copeland, Caitlyn Jenner, you guys were called the Game Changers. How's that to be honored with such amazing women?
That was just such an inspiring moment to be in a room full of powerful women and advocates, and it was a really, really inspiring night, motivating, and I think it makes us all want to work even that much harder. It was incredible to meet various actresses and artists and just at the powerful levels that they're at, and just to see what they can do you know, in other areas and not just in sports.
So let's talk about the World Cup. Let's talk about what got you to do all of these really cool things. So let's go all the way back. It started with the Group of Death, which I feel like every time there has to be a Group of Death. Yeah. Does that narrative matter to you guys? Did that affect you? Did it motivate you? Did it have you get a little worried before you started?
Well, we were all together, right? When the
in Brazil.
Yeah, we were.
We were all together when the brackets came out, and we were all in the same room, and they had it up on a big screen for us.
I just remember the consensus in the room was just like, bring it on. We were so prepared. We were ready. Because you want to play the best. You're at the best tournament in the world. You want to, you know, in order to be the best, you have to beat the best. And we were prepared to do that. So
early on, when there were some struggles against Sweden and there started to be this panic among fans or people who don't play, did you guys feel any of that? Were you worried at all? Ever?
I mean,
no, you just knew you were going to win.
We obviously knew that we weren't playing up to our potential, and so we kind of knew that it was breaking down a little bit, and I don't think we panicked at all, because I think we have enough fight and grit and such a tough mentality that we could actually win games based on that alone, and we were just kind of like vying our time for everything else to start clicking. So I think by the time we got out of the Group of Death, there was some sort of mentality shift, and everything started working together, and I think you saw that in the last three games or so, that we just kept getting better and better and better. So we never lost the faith. You know, we obviously knew that we weren't reaching our potential, but I think we got there by the end.
And you went 540 straight minutes without allowing a goal. That, like, how... how does a streak like that on the biggest possible stage, I mean, the World Cup, how does that happen?
I think honestly we were just doing our job and what's expected of us and what, you know, we expect out of ourselves. And that's, first, we're defenders. Just speaking for Becky and I think that that's our first job. So we were like, you know, we're going to defend our butts off, and then you front six, you do the rest. Like, we're going to give you as much support as we can, and then let's just go from there. But first and foremost, in your position, you have to do your job, and then whatever else comes is just an extra added bonus.
I think too, just to add on, I mean, some of our training sessions against each other are like epic battles, mm-hmm. you know? So I think that training together with the mentality that we have day in and day out makes us so prepared for those tournaments and to play at the highest level, because we face it day in and day out on the training field.
And I think we always say we have the best and second best team in the world.
I think I will agree with that. We gotta talk about Jill Ellis. She just seemed to make all the right moves throughout the tournament, and she stayed so poised and composed. Speak a little bit about what she did for you.
I think the composure is what we needed in a tournament like that, when, you know, all the nerves are, you know, battling. And so I think her composure made us feel a little bit more secure. And she is a hard ass. And so we trained so hard going into the tournament, and we put ourselves in every single situation that we could ever face. And we played some of the best teams in the world leading up to that tournament, so we knew exactly where we stood. And I think that's a credit to her for putting us in those situations so that we had the confidence going into that tournament.
I think that, you know, we did a good job sort of creating a bubble, and Jill went back to that concept a lot. You know, that it was going to take the 23 people on the team, going to take our support staff. We had to stick together. Don't let outside influences sort of burst that bubble. On the same time, we knew that, you know, we weren't playing up to our potential and that there was critics out there. You know, in hindsight, what was cool about that is that there was a jump in the standard that you all had for us, and we felt that. And I think that that's actually a giant step for the women's game, that it wasn't just like, oh, they got through the group, that's great. It was, well, they got through, but that's not going to win this thing. Mm-hmm. That, again, is just, it's wonderful for the women's game. It's saying that you all appreciate the good product that we put out there and that we're capable of putting out there.
Let's talk a little bit about that incredible final game. Was it as surreal there when you're in it? Did you feel it as early as, I mean, because watching at home was like, oh, okay, this is over as soon as it started. Did it feel that way for you guys?
Yeah, I think, you know, once Carly, honestly, yes. People ask me randomly, like, what? Oh my God, the final was so exciting and crazy. What were you thinking? I was like, I was thinking the same thing. Running around chasing Carly after her third goal in like the 12th minute, I don't know. And I got more tired chasing her, celebrating. But I remember, I think after her third, I don't know, when she hit it from half field, yes. Half field, we all were like, what the what? Like, this is nuts. Like, but that's definitely going in. We couldn't believe it, but we were just like, let's keep crushing and keep playing and not, you know, let's not let them score and let's just keep at it.
It was almost like a home, it felt, I don't know, but when I was there, it almost felt like home field advantage. It was in Canada, but there was such a huge turnout of American fans. You guys, like, feel that?
Every single game felt like a home game, and absolutely, it's like a 12th man out there. Just the energy and the belief that you can feel, it's tangible out there. So I think it made a big difference for us in the tournament. I think just having it in Canada so close, so, you know, people could make the trip up there and everything, like friends and family, so many more people were able to come to Canada as opposed to Germany in 2011, and just having that support system there, it was huge.
Kayo, what's when you look back on it, like the actual World Cup, what are you gonna remember the most?
I think it would be in Vancouver when I finally sort of caught eyes with my family and husband in the stands. You know, I had like tears streaming down my face. I was just so happy. And you know, those were the people that have been there through the crazy journey that we all experience. I mean, it's tough sometimes, but there's these highs and these lows, and your family sort of gets you through those. And to just experience it with them and have them be there and sort of catch eyes after, you know, winning that gold, I think that's sort of what I'll remember that moment for a long time.
What about you, Becky?
I think my favorite moment was probably Germany's least favorite moment, because when they missed that PK, I had never felt such certainty that we were going to win. I had no doubt in my mind after that that we were going to win the entire thing. So just feeling that, because I usually don't feel that certain about anything, but that moment I was like, it's done, we got it.
One of my favorite things about this team is that it seems like you guys are genuinely really all good friends. Are we projecting that on you, or do you all actually like each other? Good answer. Good answer.
Yeah, they're okay.
No, we're the gals.
We are, yeah.
As you guys saw, we kind of organically started calling ourselves the gals. And I think, you know, we spend a lot of time together. Years together. So, of course, you get to know inside and out the group. You know, I think that we are very close. I think that, you know, we've seen each other in these highs and lows. We've seen each other on the field and off the field successes. Some of us have gone to each other's weddings and have been part of, you know, these incredible milestones in each other's lives. So we're a very tight-knit group.
Tell me, Becky, about the Nerd Squad.
Well, we're...
Yes,
it's good.
Nerds forever.
Nerd Squad. Well, we're kind of dwindling in numbers, so I'm thinking that we're going to have like a reboot coming up soon. We're going to have some tryouts, but I mean, we're together so much and we travel the world, and that's one of the perks of our job. And so we kind of, a little group of us, like to actually do things on these trips that we go to. So it's just a group of us that actually like to, you know, kind of experience the cuisine, or like to go out and in the country that we're in and just kind of experience what it's like to be there. We also like to read and do other things, but we're definitely needing to hold some tryouts, because most of the Nerd Squad has been cut from the team in the last few years.
What about like video games? Does Nerd Squad like actually nerd out?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Tobin and I play Assassin's Creed.
Okay. Tobin and Kling. Yeah. I think Kling.
Yeah.
Becky is very sophisticated. Becky reads a lot. I mean, I think ratio of books that Becky reads to mine is like 10 to 1. She just crushes literature.
What are you reading right now?
Ready Player One, Ernest Cline.
Wow. You sort of just did this on your own, but can you all tell everyone something about each other that they probably don't know?
Oh, God.
I got one for Allie. She really likes to watch Forensic Files on HLN before bed. And she's gotten me to love it, too. So now I'm in my apartment, I'm like, HLN, you know, trying to find something to watch.
Becky needs a sponsorship from Marvel Comics. She really wants that. If anybody has any connections out there,
yeah, bring it to me.
And she wants a character of herself.
I think we need to make that happen immediately.
That's pretty cool.
We need a thing about Heyo that nobody knows.
Do you guys even know me?
She literally has selective hearing, so I will talk to her for 2 minutes, and she'll kind of be just like scrolling on her phone, and I know she's not paying attention to what I'm saying, so I'll start saying random things like, you know, I think my ear's falling off, you know, something random like that, and she literally won't talk to me for like 30 seconds, and then she'll be like, what did you say? And it happens, I mean, all the time.
Who would you say is the class clown of your team? If you had to give superlatives.
I would say Megan Rapinoe.
Yeah, Pino.
A-Rod and Pino are very funny. And Abby's just like all over the place.
Yeah.
She's like the force that comes into the room and you know that she's there. Super funny.
Who's the most talkative?
Abby.
Who is the most ambitious?
Ooh, I think Megan Klingenberg is pretty ambitious. Yeah. Kelly O'Hara, I'd say they have a lot of really good ideas for like the future of our team and what they want to do after soccer.
Who takes the most selfies?
Sydney.
Who's the worst dancer?
Abby. I mean, she's just
glad it didn't come over here because I was worried about that one.
I was going to say you were a close second, but Abby for sure is.
I've heard Abby has mom dance moves.
That's putting it nicely.
Yeah,
like, it's not
nice.
Even.
Do you guys ever feel any competition to get sponsorship opportunities? You technically are competing against each other to be the darling of the team. Do you feel that ever?
I think genuinely we're just really happy for one another when someone lands something big, because, I mean, their success is brought to the team and that it brings us into that success as well. So I think genuinely we're very happy for one another.
I think, too, we sort of respect each other's uniqueness and appreciate what everybody brings on the field gifts and off the field gifts. So I think that it's cool that we can, you know, reach different
industries of sponsorship, and people can sort of cling on to different players that they feel like they relate to the most. And I think that's cool. I think that people have gravitated towards different personalities, and we're proud of that.
What about the men's national team? Are you guys friends with them?
But we don't really see them too often. Maybe one of these days we could have a doubleheader at some point. But no, we support them 100%, and they obviously support us, and we know that they're super proud of us. And so I think basically maybe through social media a lot more than in person. But I know a few of us are friends just from, you know, either club teams, college teams, or pro teams.
Yeah, I would like to see us do more together, to be honest.
They haven't had the success that you guys have had, but MLS has been growing. And the NWSL, which you all play in. By the way, congratulations. Tell me a little bit about the NWSL and the state of it right now. It's going into its fourth season. It's expanding. Historically, I don't think a women's league has lasted longer than 3 years, so this is kind of a huge deal. How can you keep that going?
I think what would help is we need to start diverting some of the success we have with the national team down to NWSL. So it can come down to, you know, ownership and marketing and making sure people know the markets that we're in. Luckily, the Federation is so involved and they're helping with that sort of thing. But we really just need to get our names out there and the teams out there. Most of the people in Kansas City don't even know there's a professional team there, and we're back-to-back champions. So we need to do some of the things that we do with the national team down to the NWSL level and just divert some of that success.
And I also think that it can't just be 2 years out of every four that people pay attention to women's football. I think, you know, we need to do more marketing, more advertising for, you know, our club teams and the youth national teams. And I think that we need to be put more on television. Our games need to be shown and people. And I think that's why we use social media as a big platform for us to continue, you know, in the two off years that we have outside of the World Cup and the Olympics, because we want women's football to stay and growing in a positive direction. And I think that is super important that, you know, people and sponsors have to realize to keep the game growing for us.
And to be honest, I think that a successful domestic league is absolutely crucial for the success of the women's national team. The leagues in Sweden and France and Germany are, you know, long-standing, are supported well, and it's showing with the development of their national team. And I think that there's very talented younger players coming through our club environment that need to play these games week in and week out, and that's only going to help the national team. So I think it's absolutely crucial. I think it's a great sign that it's entering year four. Never been done before, so this is a good step. Hopefully it will be around for years to come, and we'll see the steady success and growth that the MLS has seen.
Entering into year four and expanding to 10 teams, correct?
Yes.
So growing, and that's fantastic. And obviously your World Cup success helped out when you guys came back. Over 40% of NWSL games sold out. So how do you guys think you, as players, is there anything you can do to help keep those new fans and also cultivate new ones?
I think once again, like social media, we're trying to use that platform as much as we can because that's really important for us since we don't have a lot of our games on TV. But like we said, you know, a lot of our success with the domestic league here is, you know, because of our national team, and that brings a lot of attention. And we need to hopefully in the future years to have a season 10 months out of the year instead of just six or seven.
And I think that the viewership of the World Cup just proved that if it's on and good times and a channel that everybody has, people like women's soccer. And so we obviously hope to get more of our NWSL games on TV. I think that will only just help grow the game.
You have a deal this year, broadcast deal, right, with Fox, which is a great channel. We'll be on the same channel together called Fox Sports One. Google it. It exists. Find it. Have it. And then watch them. And if you want, you can stick around and watch my show too. A lot of the conversation after you guys won was that you're changing the game for female athletes and that finally we're all talking about women's sports. Do you feel that? Do you feel a pressure to have that platform? Like, what's the next step for us to keep this conversation going? Because it's a conversation that needs to be had, and it's finally having it, thanks to you. So I'm curious to know your thoughts on what you think the next step is.
I think we need to get more powerful people in the powerful positions, as in, you know, FIFA and within U.S. soccer, and that can also be women. We need powerful women in those positions or people who believe in women's football that is going to take, you know, women's football to the next step and next stage and continue to grow in a positive, healthy direction. And I think that's important for this beautiful game to grow.
I mean, it's a responsibility that we want, and it's, you know, I think what will help with women's success in sports is to inspire the next generation. And so, you know, we started a She Believes campaign with the national team that was all about belief, self-belief, belief in one another. And so it doesn't even have to be about sports. It can be, you know, if you want to go into medicine or something like that, just the power of believing in oneself and having a community of women that believe in you. And so I think to continue the success, we have to keep inspiring the next generation.
Moya Dodd is a very important name for us right now. She's one of the few females on the executive committee at FIFA, and she's heading up a task force for women's football. She's recently submitted a proposal, I guess, to get 20% of the executive committee to be females, and I feel like that seems to be an achievable goal. And I do think that she had a brilliant quote, I thought, that FIFA needs to lead society, not lag behind society in gender balance in leadership positions. So we love that she's fighting for us, and hopefully it continues.
After soccer, is that a thing you guys would ever consider doing?
Abby's first.
Yeah.
See what she does.
All right. Summer Olympics. Are you thinking about that yet? Rio 2016. Is this a thing?
It's definitely a thing. It was a thing right after, you know, finished the World Cup. It's kind of like on to the next, you know, we're ready to go. But we needed this break that we have right now in November, these, you know, couple weeks off that we get to refresh, recharge, relax. Most importantly, to get that energy back to, you know, start the journey back again.
And to celebrate the fact that you won the World Cup.
Yeah, but it's been like 4 months now, so yeah. We've done a lot of celebrating.
you guys are on a victory tour right now,
correct.
Right? 10 games. How's that been? Have you seen a lot of young fans? Any amazing experiences you've had on that?
I mean, it's just been so great celebrating with our fans and the venues that we've been to. We've gotten a lot of people at our games, and it's just great to interact and to talk about the win, the World Cup, and just bringing it back to the fans. It's been absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, but it's for Jill Ellis, it's definitely been, okay, we won, and now what's next? I mean, they're already getting into evaluating players, preparing our team for the Olympics, and I think that is what made our team so great, from Mia Hamm and Michelle Akers to now us and Alex Morgan, all these young players coming up is we are so competitive and we're so eager to improve. So we're very happy that we won, but it's already one eye on Rio. Of course, we're very proud of what we accomplished this summer in Canada, but we want to dominate even more next summer and win gold again.
Immediately after you won, to go back for a second, how did you celebrate? Like that night, what did you do?
That was epic. That was really fun. The actual celebration in the locker room was unbelievable, so amazing.
I think we were late to our party because of it.
Yeah,
so we were late to our own party because of it.
But those are special times, I mean, for the team
amazing.
To just have our goggles on and champagne flying everywhere. And yeah, like Ali said, I don't think that we wanted to leave. All our family and friends were like, where are you guys? But we were having such a special moment.
Did you drink any of it, or did we just shower in it? The champagne?
Little
did you
drinking,
drink any
both.
Of it, or did
spraying.
You spray
it's
on
both.
Each other?
It was both.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's important.
Yeah.
That helps. So then you had a party with your family and friends afterwards? You don't want to say any details about any of that? Who got the drunkest?
Klingenberg. She had two bottles of tequila that she was taking to every single venue just in case we won the entire thing. And I think she might have had a whole bottle by herself that night.
Well, when we walked in, we got on stage, and all of our family and friends were standing out in the audience, and we were passed a whole bottle of champagne, each one of us, that we could pop open and just spray or drink or do whatever. So it started off really well.
And Ashlyn Harris was the DJ of the night. They had, of course, a DJ on stage for us, and then all of a sudden, Ashlyn got up there, I think, like, on it all night long. It was awesome.
EA Sports is obviously one of the sponsors here today. FIFA, you guys are in the game, which is amazing.
I wish I could score as many goals as they do on FIFA in the real game, in real life.
Yeah, we're proud. I mean, yeah. I mean, that is awesome, to be honest. That is like a childhood dream to like be in a video game. It's very cool. We think it was a very smart move for EA Sports to put women in the game, and I hope that it pays off for them because not only was it a cool thing for us, but I think it was a good business decision for them.
It's a big deal, too, because FIFA's done such a great job of helping grow soccer in America, and so to now have women be a part of the game seems like one of those things that maybe should have happened sooner, but it's kind of represents it's a big deal. It's a cultural shift. Now, what we need to talk about, though, are your ratings on FIFA. Becky, you got an 86.
Thanks.
Allie, you got an 82.
Maybe it should be higher.
And Heather, 81. That. So how do we feel about these ratings? Are they accurate?
I would say that they absolutely should be higher, for sure.
Thanks, Becky.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. No doubt in my mind.
I was disappointed in my speed. I'm a lot faster than that.
Whose FIFA version of themselves looked the least like themselves?
I don't know.
I think everyone...
It's pretty accurate.
Good, yeah.
I think there was a few that were like... So spot on. Like I think that Megan Rapinoe and Sydney LaRue were...
Yeah, Sid's was really good.
Sydney's
looks,
yeah.
All the tattoos, perfect. It was awesome.
Okay, last thing we have to talk about is this World Cup movie that the Men in Blazers are so obsessed with casting. What is it called? Women are from Victory, Men are from Germany, right? it's a perfect name. So we have a couple based on what the women have answered. Like Kelly O'Hare wants to be Kate Mara. That got me confused because Mara, whatever. Megan Rapinoe said Tilda Swinton, which is perfect.
Spot on.
Like I've done side by side. It's like that's the most perfect casting. Becky, you said Elizabeth Banks.
Yeah, I think, I mean, she's, you know, gorgeous, so.
That makes perfect sense.
That fits.
I would like to be played by that. But I think she's just... super successful, and she's a great actress, great director, funny person, just seems really accomplished, and I don't know, hopefully it would be a good fit.
But most importantly, she's beautiful, so it's perfect. Heather, you said Jennifer Garner.
She seems cool, and she's fairly attractive.
That's all you need. Ellie, you haven't answered this question yet, so I figured we should probably pick someone for you, right?
I don't know. What do you guys think?
Any suggestions?
Idina Menzel.
Idina Menzel is a good one. I was thinking Sandra Bullock.
Ooh, that's a great one.
Thank
She's
you.
Cool. A little Sandy B.
Mm-hmm.
You totally I can work
could
with
be,
that.
Could be Sandy B. You guys are incredible. You are changing the game, and I think that this is. I think we'll look back on this years from now and be like, those are the women that started this movie.
What a trio, and what a year 2015 was for them. What a year 2016 will be for them at the Olympics in Rio, I am sure. It makes me crave 2016, but be warned, the year starts in the most suboptimal way possible with the Men in Blazers show, which returns to the screen January 4th on NBCSN. We will be joined by my hair hero, Kevin Doyle. Yes, Mosley from Downton Abbey will shove himself into our panic room. I cannot wait. Until then, we wish you GFOPs and your families a happy start to the new year, health, and please, all of you, avoid relegation. To you all, courage.